Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
I have to say, most of the talk about end times seems laughable. I mean, the Mayan prophecy, the rapture, it's hard to take any of this seriously. But cultural critic Ron Rosenbaum is deadly serious about the threat of nuclear war. He says it's the one doomsday scenario we simply don't want to think about. Anne Strainchamps talked with Rosenbaum about his book, How the End Begins, The Road to a Nuclear World War III.
I think that these days there's a widespread popular assumption, and maybe dating back to the end of the Cold War, that the immediate threat of nuclear war is by and large a thing of the past. Your book suggests that this is a terrible mistake to be making and that we should, in fact, be more worried about nuclear war.
Yeah, I think that, in fact, we're in a more dangerous and unstable situation regarding nuclear weapons than we were at the height of the Cold War, when there were two main nuclear adversaries, but they were talking, there was a hotline, there were negotiations. Now there are nine nuclear nations. There's one run by a madman, North Korea. There are nations that are run by theocrats. There's Pakistan, which has 200 nuclear warheads, and they're one bullet or one coup away of coming under the control of Taliban or Al-Qaeda elements. And so a regional nuclear war is a not unlikely prospect, and a regional nuclear war could escalate into a global nuclear war.
Wow. At the height of the Cold War, the U.S. and the Soviet Union each had enormous nuclear arsenals. I know there are more nuclear nations by now, but is the global nuclear arsenal as big, bigger, smaller?
Certainly the U.S. and USSR, or now Russia, have reduced their nuclear arsenals. They were at a ridiculous level of 20,000 operational nukes on either side, and now it's more like 2,500. However, those 2,500 nukes, which will be reduced somewhat by the new treaty, are on what's known as hair trigger alert, a 15-minute warning window. In other words, our policy is to launch our silo-based buried nuclear weapons before they can be destroyed by an incoming attack. And to do that, we may launch them on the basis of radar and satellite systems alone, signals rather than observation. And that means that we're at the peril of false positives. And there have been close calls, you know, where we have thought we were under nuclear attack and we almost launched our weapons and 15 minutes.
Really? There have been close calls and we've come very close to nuclear war? When?
Well, one of the most dramatic ones was recounted by Zbigniew Brzezinski, no hothead, when he was national security advisor to President Carter in 1980. He got one of those 3 a.m. calls from the NORAD warning center inside the hollowed out Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado. And it said their screen showed that there were 220 nuclear weapons heading over the pole toward the U.S. He better call the president. You know, you have minutes before our missiles are going to be destroyed. We have to get ours launched. Brzezinski, fortunately, waited a few minutes or wiped the sleep from his eyes. Then he got another call, and they said, sorry, it was a mistake. There are 2,200, not 220, missiles heading our way. Then Brzezinski thought, well, I guess I better call the president. Fortunately, before he called the president, and this is all in his memoir, and it's backed up by the testimony of other people in the nuclear chain of command. Fortunately, it turned out the warning of a nuclear attack was based on training tapes, which had been late at night fed into the screens at the NORAD Warning Center for drill purposes. And they were mistaken for real. But nonetheless, we were in minutes of a full-scale nuclear war. When you have the ability to destroy the planet, it's almost as if you don't need there to be too many close calls. It's all a close call. We're all a few minutes, a simple human error or machine error from some catastrophic development.
Well, this makes it sound as though we've simply been very lucky that there's been no nuclear war broken out so far on the basis of, you know, false positives. But I thought the whole theory behind nuclear deterrence was that the more nations that have nukes, in some ways, the safer we all are. Because, you know, if you launch a strike against another nation, they're likely to strike back and destroy you.
That doesn't sound too safe to me. Deterrence worked when it was a bipolar US-USSR kind of thing. And it was clearly we were threatening each other with genocide. Now, you know, some dissident nuclear commander in Pakistan could decide he is angry at some other nation in the Middle East. And so there are a number of danger spots where a regional nuclear war at the very least could flare up.
Well, one country, Middle Eastern country, that must have many plans in place for possible nuclear escalation is Israel. How is Israel dealing with the threat of nuclear war?
Well, it's a very tense matter. Israel does not declare officially that it has nuclear weapons, yet it's estimated to have up to 200. And I devote some time in my book to the effect of the Holocaust on Israel's hair-trigger nuclear response. In other words, the people of Israel, Jews, have suffered one Holocaust. They're in a region where Pakistan has what it calls the Islamic bomb. Iran is building nuclear weapons.
So do the Israelis talk much about the danger of a second Holocaust?
Yes, actually. That phrase was first used as far back as 1967 when they were invaded by three nations. You know, the Israeli historian Benny Morris wrote a long essay about how the next Holocaust will be different. In other words, it will be a push-button, disengaged, automatic-like affair as opposed to the hands-on Holocaust of Hitler and the SS.
Let's suppose nuclear war breaks out in the Middle East. Something escalates. Israel is attacked or Israel attacks. How many people do you think would die in a nuclear war in the Middle East?
In January 2010, Scientific American published a report on what the casualties from a small, quote-unquote, nuclear war, say between India and Pakistan, would be. And in addition to the millions that would be killed on the ground and from firestorms, et cetera, they said that the ash kicked up into the atmosphere would form a chilling shroud that would kill enough food crops to cause the death of a billion more people.
Yeah, this is such a terrifying story. I wonder whether sometimes people simply don't want to hear this, don't want to hear what you have to say.
I think that's true. In America, we're addicted in sort of a nice way to what someone has called solutionism. Well, there's got to be a solution to this problem. You know, we're Americans. We solve problems. It's got to be a solution to the Middle East. It's got to be a solution to nuclear weapons. The more I've studied this, the less I believe there is a solution, unfortunately. And that's the thing that people don't want to hear.
Ron Rosenbaum talked with Anstrain Champs. His book is called How the End Begins, The Road to a Nuclear World War III.